Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
You're ball in the trees and then you live out the putt. But if you've got a little time, then come and spend it with us. Just now you're listening to The Rough Cut.
Hello, 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 and welcome down to yet another episode of The Rough Cut Golf Podcast. And you join us this week in a very special location. Heaven on earth, my future home and site where my ashes will be scattered once my body is burnt to a cinder. We are in Pinehurst. And it is quite the incredible area. We will share with you everything that we've experienced so far. But first of all, I'm with Jacob and I'm with Kieran here on this momentous adventure. So, how are we, gentlemen? Are you well?
Very good.
I am well, yes, thank you. You've changed your mind on where you want to get scattered?
Yeah, not seriously.
Okay. Oh, okay. I don't want to do like a 50-50. We're still thinking a bit of Isle of Arran and then a bit of here.
Maybe I could have my arms kind of scattered here.
Your heart, Isle of Arran has your heart, but Pinehurst has your soul. I don't know.
Golfing heart. Yeah.
I think is it Richard the Lionheart whose heart is buried in Chalos, I think, in France?
His heart?
Yeah.
Yeah, the castle that he got killed at. Mm. His heart is buried there, I think. For no apparent reason. I think it was just why not? You know, medieval times, there wasn't a lot going on. Like, they had to get the kick somewhere.
It's not a Pirates of the Caribbean situation where the castle has to have a king and the heart stays there or something.
Don't think so.
No.
The Dutchman must have a king.
The king.
Captain.
How many times have you watched that? Come on.
So many times.
So just to fill everybody in, we have come over to the United States to play in a qualifier event for the PGA Tour. Now, the queue at Myrtle Beach, the result of that is under a strict embargo. It is in an ironclad safe in the middle of a bank. Can't get to it. But while we were over here, we thought, you know what? Let's get about a bit. Let's get to some courses that I've always wanted to visit. I've always wanted to film at and just really kind of engage with Carolina in a way which hasn't been done before. And I would say so far, it's been a pretty successful trip.
Yeah, it's been very successful. It's been a lot of driving. Not for me or you, but for you, Pete.
A lot of driving.
But we've done... I think it's kind of one of those things that when you come over to the States and you look on a map and you think, oh, that can only... We're in the same state. Like, it can't be any longer than 2 hours. And everything turns into, no, 4.5 hour drives. Yeah, not kind of used to that in the UK. Yeah.
I mean, my long driving skills... Again, I back my long driving skills to anyone. Like, haulage drivers, train drivers, someone who's flying from Sydney to, I don't know, New York, even though, you know, these are all different licenses, by the way.
Yeah, it's so more expensive than others.
Yeah.
You shouldn't hop around and try that. been there, done that. I would back myself in a long distance race against anybody.
Yeah.
Could do a 24 hour at Le Mans.
However, it has to be said that Carolina and the golf courses I absolutely love. The scenery doesn't change much.
No, no, it doesn't.
For what we've been driving.
Pretty flat, just woodland.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen some, you know, we've seen some pretty cool towns and some pretty iffy towns.
Interesting towns.
Interesting towns.
I think this might form part of my essay report on the US when I sit down to write it. Very, very strange. Like Pinehurst, where we are at the moment, amazing. Like one of my favorite places I've ever been. Beautiful. And to be honest, I kind of knew that I was going to like it even before I came. But it's one of those situations where you should never meet your heroes.
Yeah.
For me, in my mind, Pinehurst is like a hero golf destination.
Yeah, yeah.
So in that respect, I was a little bit worried about it not living up to the expectation which I'd built up in my mind. You know, I've been excited about this for years. And I have to say, it kind of lived up to everything that I hoped it would be. Which really made me happy. I'm not going to lie. I was hoping and I was praying that it was going to be what I thought, and it was. It's fantastic.
We had good weather as well, and everything, like all those sorts of things just sort of tick the boxes as well, doesn't it? It's like,
yeah,
it's great.
It's weird though, because like we obviously started in Myrtle Beach and played some really good courses down there. The Thistle Club I thought was fantastic. Never even heard of it before. And it's wow, all of a sudden you've got this amazing course with huge alligators.
First ever alligator.
Played the Dunes course, which the event is going to be kind of held on. That was great. TPC Myrtle Beach was a revelation.
Yeah.
So good.
I wanted to say that I really, really loved the course, but I'm so scared of saying anything over what we're not meant to say. That was it. The setup of that course, they just had the, was it the Dustin Johnson
Junior World
and stuff. Yeah. So the first thing that we were told when we went into the club and the pro shop was this course is in the best condition that it's ever be in. And it played like that.
It was superb. I mean, if you've ever been lucky enough to play, then great. If you haven't, it's just like an American Woburn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With more water.
Yeah, we kind of mentioned that it had sort of a Surrey club vibe.
Yeah, so anything like that. A Wentworth, a Sunningdale, and that's like...
I'm not sure I go as far as Sunningdale.
Not a Sunningdale?
No, they're a bit more heathland.
Yeah, that's true.
This wasn't like a heathland. It was like a... Yeah, I would say Woburn would be the fairest comparison that I could give.
I agree.
Yeah, yeah.
Me being the experienced golf perv that I am.
And a tree fan.
A lot of trees, though.
Yeah.
A lot of, and a bald eagle. We saw a bald eagle.
We did.
Was very exciting.
Yeah, that was cool.
We ticked off a lot of nature.
Didn't get eaten by any of the gators.
No. Despite the massive signs telling us not to feed them.
And we just got closer and closer and closer.
Yeah.
Jacob scared one off as well.
Yeah, I didn't... I'd seen the videos. There's the golfer, isn't there, that's like walking down one of the fairways and he just kind of nonchalantly walks up and taps it on the tail.
Cameron, gives it a slap on the ass.
Cameron Champ.
Is that who it was?
Is it Cameron Champ?
I think so, yeah.
So I had this idea in my mind that I could get as close to it as possible, but as soon as I moved, it was gone. So
I just didn't like the look of it.
Sorry, I ruined some photo ops, I think.
No, it's all right. It's all good. It was very, very cool. Obviously, we went to... Where did we go before? Florida. And we were there for 2 months. 2 weeks. Didn't see anything.
Mm.
And you know, it was very cool. Yeah.
South Carolina stepped up on the gator front for sure.
Mm.
I was left wanting from Florida last year. Well,
we've seen it's not like we've seen like one or two. We've seen loads.
Yeah, everywhere. Yeah,
everywhere. Which is so cool.
There was that one fairway, wasn't there? We were walking in the qualifier, and it was like baby alligator after baby alligator, just like weirdly placed in the same position, like all the way down the,
like
all the way down.
If you're listening to this in an American state that has alligators, this must
This is nothing to you.
Is, so what? Like this is like seeing squirrels today.
Yeah.
A lot of them and all.
Yeah, they are big squirrels.
Big squirrels, yeah. All different colours as well. Beautiful.
But no, we had a really good time at Myrtle Beach. I was very surprised with the course in a good way, and I'm looking forward to everything being able to come out and we can actually talk about it properly and release our video on your round, which was good. I'm looking forward to everything that's going to happen. It's going to be cool.
Yeah, I'm very impressed with like the organisation of everything as well. I think that's the thing that I'll say with it. Like I was blown away by just how like serious it was.
Yeah,
it was a proper event.
I know.
It's playing the PGA Tour event.
Yeah, I don't really know what I was expecting.
You just thought it was going to be a bunch of influencers turning up.
A little bit.
Having a bit of a laugh.
Yeah.
Didn't you?
I did.
You know what? You belong at Golf Digest, you. You know what? Not taking us seriously. You know what I mean? Kieran, we are golfers, okay?
Yeah.
We are golfers.
It's the first time that we've ever been to anything and me and Kieran had to attend a production meeting.
We did.
As content creators.
And I don't know about you guys, that's my first NDA.
Had to sign.
Yeah.
They were hot on it. Like, anyone who walked on site, there was an NDA in front of your face.
I didn't read it. Did you actually read any of it?
Oh, no.
I just signed it.
You didn't read any of it?
No.
Oh, wow.
We've sold ourselves.
Yeah, they've got you.
Yeah.
When you try and leave on Thursday, they're going to be like, no, sorry. This NDA lasts until the video comes out and we can't risk you leaving the country.
Does that mean we have to stay here for 2 months?
No, it actually means we've got to go to that town that was collapsed.
Ah, the collapsed roofs.
That was a bit rough. We'll get onto that again. And talking about coming over through those slightly dodgy towns, we went from Myrtle Beach and we came to Pinehurst. And we played number two, first of all. So the US Open anchor site now.
Mm.
US Open's going to be coming back here loads in the next, like, 20 years.
Yeah, I was reading them out, wasn't it, on the way there. They've basically got it, like, set up till 2051 or something.
They're very organised.
And the USGA are going to... They're building their... base.
They're building some kind of base here, aren't they?
Yeah. It looks like they're going to stay here.
I'm really not sure if that's a... I think overall it's a good thing. I suppose maybe because I kind of miss these announcements, it might take a little bit the excitement out of it.
Yeah.
You know, but I think for the actual venues, it allows them to get sorted and properly prepared, which is the most important thing. You know, me having a surprise factor is probably not weighing on the USGA's mind much.
Yeah. And I mean, even for me, like, coming over, like, I'll admit, like, I didn't know much about number two. Like, I didn't have there might be some courses where we have played on this trip, which we'll get onto a bit later, where you know there's a specific hole that you've seen or a shot or something that's always shown on telly. And I just don't have an image. I didn't have anything to kind of lead off.
Mm.
You know, I embarrassed myself last week not knowing who Payne Stewart was, and he won there in 99?
91? 99, yeah.
Things like that. Like, I had no kind of contextual idea of, like, what actually happened here. And I immediately walked off that golf course and I just cannot wait to watch next in June. And we were speaking to a couple of the guys and I can't believe how good Martin Keimer must have been to shoot what he shot when he was here. Everyone seems to feel that it's going to be one of those, and I think we say this every year, but it is going to be one of those level par 1-2 under winning scores, which we would like from a US Open.
Yeah, and what did he say? It was like, there's only been 6 under par recorded professional rounds or something like that.
Yeah,
which ever.
In the US Open, which is yeah, you know, absolutely freaky.
Including Keimer's.
But you can understand exactly why. Like, when we played it, we're not going to do like a full kind of run through now, but the first hole's like a relatively light 390. And we played this, we played the US Open tees as well for this video. So right off the tips.
Yeah.
Like 7,800 yards, whatever it was. At one of the toughest golf courses in the world, if not the toughest.
Beast. Absolute beast.
And it was kind of like a gentle opening. Then as soon as I stepped onto the second tee, it was like a 480 par four. So, you know what? Fine. Could deal with this. And we did because I'm a boss. Next hole's a little shorty, and then it's kind of like, well, I'm feeling actually quite confident at this point. I'm feeling pretty good.
Yeah.
And then Mitchell, who was our caddy for the day, kind of takes us back in a direction which I wasn't quite sure where he was going. He said, right, we've got a par four. Like, okay, cool. I can do a par four. Feeling good. Swing's feeling great. Driving's great. Have a look down at it, and I swear to God, the green, I can hardly see the green, it's so far away. And I'm like, this, are you sure we're on the right tee? He said, yeah, this is the 535-yard par four, fourth.
Absolute disgrace.
One round the corner.
Yeah. I'm like, I'm looking at it like, what the?
Yeah.
What is this?
What do I do?
Like, what actually is this? Anyway, we'll whack off there, but I'm not going to obviously give the scores away. And I'm like, right, okay, cool. That was a bit of a mind boggler. And then he takes us on to the par five next. And they've built these tees. they've built like five extra tees back into the trees.
Yeah.
It's they've added like a 600 and something yard par five. And again, you're looking at it like the fairway's not big.
No.
And it's just wasteland everywhere. I'm like, this is just brutal.
Yeah. But also, I think one of the things as well is that you played it relatively soft compared to what it's going to be like.
The greens were soft compared to what they'll be
The runoffs and everything like that.
It's kind of hard to describe, and I was trying to describe this on video as well. So if you imagine a normal green, like a normal circular green, everything's so raised up into like a turtle shell kind of shape that the sides of the greens for about 4, 5, 6 feet, they're not actually greens because the ball just rolls off them. Like they're there to just repel anything that kind of tries to get near any flags. And we played it on a relatively soft day. Now, when it's playing firm, the way that they've designed and redesigned it, you could see balls running off these greens 50, 60 yards in directions which I'm not even sure Pinehurst really know about.
Yeah.
It's untested.
Mm.
And I'm like, this is just going to be absolute carnage.
There's going to be some very big scores, you'd have thought, at some point.
Massive.
Yeah.
Because you've got to be long, accurate, everything precise. Like, it's just the ultimate test.
Yeah, there's holes on there that, like, you might think, all right, okay, so 480-yard par four.
Yeah.
Like, maybe the tees will be raised or whatever. You know, it won't play its yardage. It plays every single inch.
Mm.
Yeah. And we had it, as what like you say, it was soft greens, but in terms of conditions as well, like we had a pretty still day, it was warm, you know, all of those kind of things. I know in June it should be fairly similar, but we also saw the next day how bad the rain can come in.
My word. Yeah, we played number four the next day, which, I mean, I wasn't the only one to say this at Pinehurst, but for many people it's their favourite course.
Yeah, I was amazed. I think maybe you just kind of naturally just drawn into the fact, okay, there's a US Open venue here. Of course, that's going to be the best.
Mm.
I will say, we've gone through the whole of that conversation about number two, and we've not spoken about the gentleman who was playing in front of us.
The guy with
the swingless club.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if I absolutely love that he's teed it up at this year's Open venue with essentially a gun and knocked it around with these beautiful tight 240 draws off the tee. He absolutely stiffed it on a par three and got fist bumps from everyone from pressing a button.
Yeah. Unbelievable. It's so cool.
I love it.
It was cool. The guy came over and one of the guys he was playing with, and he said, like, just to let you know, and I don't think he would have said anything. I'm pretty sure he said he wouldn't have said anything if we weren't there. He was like, just to let you know, if you're going to let us through, that's fine. If you hear what sounds like a gun going off, it's just my mate who uses this swingless club. I couldn't believe it.
If you're not someone and you are watching this rather than listening, Kieran will throw a picture up now. But it's effectively an air compression kind of kick thing at the end of a shaft. And it just kind of like fires into the ball and the ball takes off. I think Rick's done a video on this.
I
love it. I think it's cool. I mean, I'd have one. Definitely.
He was using it off the par threes as well. Oh, he stiffed one of them on the par three.
You can adjust it for like different heights and different distances. Honestly,
it's been an absolute nightmare to play against.
Yeah. It'd be a low handicap. He was doing all his own putting, which again, around Pinehurst,
and chipping, like, I think 50 yards and in, he was doing. But
I can't. It's absolutely fine, and it's good because it means that he can get out and play golf and things like that. They did say that, you know, he uses it for a reason. But it was the fact he was just getting fist bumps and celebrations for not doing anything.
Wow, Jacob being all the golf purist. I just
like it. Like, he's on the first, because you have to like pull this like cartridge, just pulls it off and then throws it on the ground and then puts it and lines himself up. I thought it was brilliant.
It was a great t-shirt.
It was a great t-shirt.
First time I've seen it in person. It was actually not as loud as I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, he was.
But it was still very gun-like.
He did build it up, didn't he? I was like, I was kind of like,
and all the pros at Pinehurst as well. They literally everyone came out.
They're all late for their meeting, weren't they?
Yeah,
they're all off for a meeting. Then they said, oh, And then a guy came over and warned everyone that a gunshot's going to be firing off. So, oh, we'll wait for the meeting.
Yeah.
We'll see what all this is about.
He was like calling all the buddies in, wasn't he, on the radio, like, everyone to T1.
Yeah, literally everyone get here.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, no, that was quite. And we literally just arrived at Pinehurst. We maybe walked around the shop for 20 minutes and then went and played some golf. Mm. He wasn't out the next morning, though. We were out, as we said, on number four. Significantly earlier than everyone else. I think it was about 7 o'clock in the morning.
Mm.
And the weather forecast was not looking great. And we actually got away with it.
We did.
Looking horrific.
Yeah.
We did.
It's the worst. I mean, obviously, coming over to a place like this is... It's great, but for obviously filming purposes, we need the weather to be of a certain kind of standard, you know. Mm. Can't really take the cameras out if it's torrential rain. We've done that before and it doesn't work.
We've
out.
Already had a death in the family from that. So
Electronics and rain don't mix. Who'd have thought?
We had like two or three holes that was a bit on the
edge.
We were going to call it, but
it was a little bit on the edge, but it cleared through and in the end we got away with it.
Yeah.
But yeah, the actual course at number four, it's held like US amateur stuff before.
Mm.
And it's a Pinehurst course, you know, it's really good. But I was very surprised. Personally, I think number two is better just because it's the ultimate test of golf, I think, in many respects. But I think if I was going to go play on a regular occurrence, I think number four might be a little bit more welcoming.
Mm. For your regular Joe golfer, that you can understand why people say that, because number two... If you are prepared to get beaten up, then fair enough. If you're a bit of a masochist and you just love the pain of that, then I can understand. But number four was a lot more friendly, but a test as well.
Almost like a miniature number two, but it's still long. But you get a lot of characteristics of two, just in a nicer, tighter, like, you know, a nice sort of. Fairway's a bit wider and it's a bit easier. Would you say that?
I think it's still challenging. I think like number four...
It's definitely easier though.
Yeah.
I think... Oh yeah, definitely easier.
Yeah.
Put it out. Like,
exactly.
Anything's easier than
number
two.
That's what I'm saying.
But I think I think number four kind of gives you a bit of a bear hug, kind of ruffles your hair a little bit and says, ah, you're good. And then number two kind of gives you that bear hug, but because you can't get away, just kind of continuously knees you in the crotch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You just keep squeezing and you're like, why is this hug not finished yet?
Yeah. And it just like squeezes the life straight out of you.
I cannot breathe
if you're not careful.
By the end, you're like Leonardo DiCaprio on The Revenant when, you know, he gets...
It's a reference I'm not aware of.
You know, when he gets like mauled by the bear.
Right.
And he... You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, like, that's how you end Pinehurst 2.
Wow.
Because you know,
you're mulled by
a bear in a bloody mess on the 18th green.
Yeah.
It's not quite that tough. Like, we're just taking the analogy just that little bit too far.
Sorry.
There was water as well on four, wasn't there? Which was not something you saw on two. It was only sort of around three or four holes and then disappeared again.
Yeah, it was just like a big lake in the middle, wasn't it? Which wasn't very Pinehursty in some respects, but I think it added to it. I think it gave it a little bit of difference, a point of interest which wasn't there on the other holes.
Yeah. I'd say that was the best outro ever as well.
I think
outro of any video.
I mean, that video is going to be coming out before number two anyway, so you're going to see that.
Yeah, it should be soon. Yeah, it should be soon. I would go as far to say that I feel that the stuff that we filmed on this trip and are going to be filming in the next few days may be like the best batch of content we've done. I think it's not only in terms of the golf, in terms of the places we've come to play, but just generally overall, I think the quality of the content that is going to come out of this is, I'm really excited for.
Yeah, I think it's the course is obviously kind of massively helped. You know, if you're doing
and
things
the
against those backdrops, and it's not freezing cold, it really kind of helps. It starts to speak for itself a little bit. You know, like playing on these courses and playing good golf is great, but when you've got that as the backdrop and you've got something which can hold the interest of people watching that isn't just reliant on the golf, then it makes everything so much easier. And obviously all the camera angles, the drone stuff is just going to look absolutely epic.
Mm.
It's going to be cool. I think after that we did play number eight, which we can chat about a bit. It's, The back nine of number eight, I really liked. The front nine, I wasn't 100% sure about. But
yeah, it was a. We kind of mentioned it while we were playing, didn't we? It was kind of resorty in the way.
Yeah, a bit resorty. Yeah.
There was a couple of holes where, you know, it was set up quite friendly to. There's absolutely no disrespect to your shot on the par five, Kieran, but the one that ran off the bank, like down onto the green.
Oh, wow, that was a great shot.
No, it was. It was a very good shot, but I'm saying, like, those kind of banks are there as, like, you know, as you say, John, the 32 handicapper who slices it right.
It was a slicer's buffer bank. Yeah. That's the only reason that was there.
Except you being the quality player you are, you played for the slope.
Yeah.
There you go.
I did. I found my landing spot. Put it down.
You did
slope.
Find it. You had no idea it was there. You didn't have a clue it was there.
I didn't have a clue, no. It was a good shot, though. It was good.
One of my favourite things that's come out of this trip so far is the quality of starters that we've had on each course. Everyone's been lovely.
To be fair, we've
been very, very lucky this trip in regards to playing some social golf, being able to play Pinehurst number eight, obviously unbelievable. The social golf that I actually kind of want to talk about a bit is playing the Cradle. Now, the Cradle's a par three course and it's nine holes. And we'd heard different variations of what people thought about it. George Bryan had mentioned it and was like, oh, it's cool, but you hit off mats. Some people were like, it's amazing, you have to go and do it. And we went and played very late into the evening and finished essentially in pitch black.
Literally in the pitch black.
And it was so much fun. Mm. It was so cool. Mm. And Ed Ormsby, who was the starter there, was really cool. He didn't say if this was the case, but he did give me a vibe of the fact that he's been doing that for the past 40 years. And he's like, that is his love of Pinehurst. Mm. And he adores being there and all this kind of stuff. He gave us pitch repairers and signed them.
Yeah,
so we're
like
looking at each other like, should we know who this person is? Yeah. Or is he just...
Everyone knows that.
He's like Neil Warnock, where he's got all the pictures in the back of his car pre-signed.
He just
hands out.
He was just like, it was also one of those with his voice. Like, I just sort of like...
Yeah.
I don't really take him what he was saying.
No,
just
he was
like,
very relaxed.
I was just like looking at him. Like, it was just beautiful.
Yeah, you didn't hear him mention that, did you?
No.
So why are you staring at me?
Why are you
staring at me, buddy?
Had really nice blue eyes and just the most calming American voice.
Why are you staring into my eyes? Just gave you a pitchfork, said, please leave me alone.
No, I'm with you on that. He could have recorded a little audio book and fallen asleep to his...
Yeah,
the sounds of Pinehurst.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the Cradle was cool. Again, we played that on the day when it rained a lot, so a lot of the runoffs and a lot of the slopes that were maybe there to take the ball away and to do crazy things with weren't at their quickest. So maybe we didn't see it. It's mightiest evil best, but I think. For something which is so simple, like a par three course, to be right next to some of the best courses in the world, to have a bar in the middle of it.
Oh, yeah. And people were sat around a fire.
The fire pits, yeah.
Like, the most immaculate vibes possible.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Very, very cool.
And I'd say probably after that, you kind of, I think you maybe mentioned it, Pete, the adventure began, I suppose, because everything up to that point had been very planned, very strategically organized. We knew what we were doing. And then we found ourselves coming off the number eight and we're looking at each other like, where are we going now?
Yeah,
what's the plan, Pete?
So we had a few little planning issues as far as after Pinehurst, we had tomorrow in the diary, kind of at Tobacco Road, which we'll get on to. But in the middle of that, we had some filming planned with a few people. Some of that kind of happened. Some of that's been pushed back. But it left us with a few days where we had really no proper course booked in. Now, we could have stayed around here. We could have stayed around Pinehurst. But we thought, no. Let's go on a little road trip. And we managed to get a time secured down at the Harbour Town Golf Links, which is home of the RBC Heritage on the PGA Tour, one of the very best public golf courses in the States, in the world. And it was, again, really, really fantastic. Absolutely loved it. If you've not seen Harbour Town, it's... one of the best tests of golf on the PGA Tour, not because of its length, even though we found out they have lengthened it.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, we played it off the back tees again, and yes, it was tough. But it's also just incredibly tight, and all the trees like grown into the fairways. There's some new tees in which you've literally got to hit through
small gaps,
a tunnel, like tunnels of trees, like not only like side to side but above. And it's just a constant challenge of like judging ball flights and judging positioning. It's a real kind of nerdy golf kind of paradise. We also played on it. Exceptionally windy day.
We did, yeah.
Which
yeah.
made it so hard.
Mm.
My God, that was such a struggle at times. But again, just immaculate kind of vibes coming down those last two holes.
Yeah, a very, very cool course. Very, very cool course. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, you speak about how the length of it isn't necessarily its biggest defense, but because it got so windy, and again, don't want to spoil anything before videos come out, but... The wind came into effect, shall we say, on multiple occasions. And it was, again, it's just one of those places where I've watched it on the telly. You know, you remember that 18th. I remember obviously watching last year with Mats Fitzpatrick's shot in the playoff against Jordan Spieth. You can see why he won there, because it just feels like his type of course. And you don't have to have insane distance, even though he's obviously improved in that massively, but his iron play is very good. And I like to see that there are courses that are still about plotting your way around. You know, there's strategy to, and it's not just like you just need to hit this on the right fairway or the right hand side of the fairway. It's more in depth than that. It's the how far you set it back and where you're going to put it to. And there's a couple of holes that even you don't quite get the picture of when you're watching it on the telly, and seeing it in person of how much the trees and how they overhang coming into effect. I wasn't expecting it to be great, but I was pleasantly surprised with how cool a place it was and how welcoming everyone was as well. We got looked after really, really well that day.
That's Southern hospitality.
As is everywhere. Pinehurst has been great to us. Harbortown was great to us. Pinehurst once again is being great to us here.
What do you think about Super 8? Super 8 motels
in Charlotte.
Is it a chain?
Because I've seen them all over the place, and I kind of just presume that it would have been of like a certain kind of standard,
like a Premier Inn.
Well, it was a Wyndham hotel chain thing.
Yeah, I think it's part of their them. Group.
Yeah, their group. Right. So yeah, name wise, you kind of look at it. I mean, yeah, this is where this is where the adventure definitely begins. I'd say after traipsing all the way down to Hilton Head for Harbortown, we then decided, well, we might as well go to Charlotte and do something. And
because you wanted to watch an NBA.
Don't drag me and Kieran. Me and Kieran were up for like going and doing more golf. We were up for doing like some really cultured things. Like museums and art galleries.
100%.
And seeing. But no, Jacob wanted to go see the Charlotte Hornets batter the
New York.
Brooklyn Nets. Brooklyn Nets.
You're telling me that you hated every minute of yesterday. Oh,
honestly, I was one of the worst days I've ever had.
Fair enough. I do apologise for putting you through that. No, this is a Super 8 motel that we stayed in. I said it to you when we got there. I think that's the worst hotel I've ever stayed in my life.
It's definitely not the worst hotel I've ever stayed in. Because I've stayed in some.
Yeah, I've stayed in.
I honestly don't think I've stayed in anything worse than that.
Really?
Honestly, yeah. It was fine.
Had a bed, didn't it?
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. It was
a two bed.
Two double
like,
beds. Yeah.
Don't hear what I'm not saying. I'm not saying that it was like I hated it, but that I've been probably fortunate that I've not had to stay in anything worse than that.
I mean, yeah. I made we completely cleared the car out of any valuables and took everything inside the rooms.
I'll be honest, it's one of those places where if my mother knew I was staying there, then she wouldn't have been happy. She really wouldn't have been happy.
Well, you know what? I hold up my hands and I made a mistake in that booking, but it was a good adventure.
Well, it was a very good. I don't remember getting back to it. I do remember the taxi driver saying, "Don't go outside."
Well, we went out for a few after the game. We went out for a few bevvies, and by the time we got back to the hotel, the taxi driver was just basically saying, he said, "Do not leave your room."
Yeah, yeah.
And we're like, well, obviously a bit.
We were kind of joking about what he was like, don't leave your room.
He said, he practically said, do not leave your room. It is not a good area.
Yeah.
In the morning, you should be able to go to the petrol station. Yeah. And it was like, oh God.
Yeah.
So we took his advice, locked the door multiple times, shoved one of the beds right up against it,
yeah.
Cowered in the corner.
Me and Kieran took guard duty. We went up and did an hour each and we were looking out.
I think as soon as we went in there, the guy said, just to let you know, no smoking in the rooms, there'll be a fine. Okay, fine. That's absolutely understandable.
Yeah, cool, yeah.
We walk up the stairs and it's just this...
Stinks.
This wall of marijuana just like...
It's hot box.
Just hits you as soon as you went down that corridor. It's like, oh my God. Yeah, and then went in, but your bathroom tiles got a massive hole in the floor.
Yeah, I had a nice bath. I had a bath.
What was your aircon like?
Oh, weird, wasn't it?
It was like kind of popped on and off.
Yeah, it just went on and off, but like it would make the loudest noise. It would go, and then be on for like 5 minutes, then turn off, and so then crack on again.
I think I made a genius call. So imagine a white noise soundtrack, okay? And when it's turned up really loud, that's what my aircon noise was making. So I thought, you know what? If I just leave it on, this is basically white noise.
Yeah.
So I was like, that's fine. I figured that out. And then I went to have a shower and I turned the kind of extraction fan on in there.
Oh, no.
And I went back to the bed just while the kind of shower was warming up when it was coming from the cellar basement that the water was coming from. And honestly, this I thought one of you two were taking the mic at my door because it was kind of like in that direction. Because I could just hear from the bathroom or from the door, like,
like a peacock noise.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, fuck. I was like, Kieran, just...
yeah, Kieran.
I'm not in the mood, because this was hungover in the morning.
Yeah.
Not in the mood for this. Just like, get up, look, go to the door, and I'm like, it's coming from the bathroom. It's like this extraction going there. The extraction fan is just screaming into the bathroom. It's like, oh God, where are we here? Oh man. Anyway, we escaped from there. Well done, everyone.
You don't want to return, though.
I wouldn't recommend the Charlotte Super 8.
You're one and done.
Near the university.
I'd definitely go to a game again. That was really, really cool.
The game was cool.
That was my first live NBA game, and it was awesome. We started up in the gods.
We were naughty.
We were a little bit naughty. We got to halftime, and Kieran was like, do you reckon we can get down there? Like, how far down do you reckon we can go? So we're like, I think we can do it. I think we should be all right. So Kieran set off and he was like, right, if you just watch that seat next to that couple there.
Yeah, because we didn't have phone signal.
Yeah, didn't have phone signal or anything like that. So keep looking at that seat. If I get there and I wave, that's the time you got to come. And would you know, you got there. We saw you.
Yeah.
We were like, perfect. Right, Pete, we're off. So we headed off. So we were going through. And actually, what was a big problem before we got into the stadium turned into something that actually helped us quite a lot. So Pete bought the tickets on his phone, which, as most ticket situations are these days, you do it, you add it to your Apple Wallet.
Yep.
You don't, it's all paperless. You don't have to worry about it anymore. No print. You don't need printers in this world. And we got to the stadium and Pete's phone doesn't work.
Yeah. I just want to give a massive shout out and say that there are other providers of tickets other than StubHub. Like, if the entire StubHub corporation went up in an inferno, I would not be overly disappointed.
Not a fan, no.
I just hate the fact, with a passion, that when you go to buy something and it says, this ticket is $30, you look at it and you go, cool.
Cool, yeah.
$30. That sounds good. You go through all the process, you put in your card details, everything. And then the final invoice page is your $30, your $20 handling fee.
Who's handled it? It's a
digital ticket.
Yeah.
There's been literally no handling. Like, it is unhandleable. It's an electronic ticket. You got your tax on there, a service fee, which is different than a handling fee.
Obviously.
Maybe it's someone servicing the handler. I don't know. I don't know what they're doing in
and
those offices.
And then tax on the handler.
And then tax on the handler. And by the time you get to the end, that $30 ticket has turned into $60. And we're still sat up in the heavens. So I was a little bit annoyed anyway by the time we got to the stadium. Then my phone stopped working. It was the weirdest thing. It was kind of like... You could move some things around. I'm not going to explain it, but you could tell it wasn't working properly.
Yeah.
And we got down to these seats that Kieran had kind of managed to blag his way into. Court side, practically.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
And we got to one guy who wouldn't let us in. Then we found this really lovely lady. And I said, listen, we're in here. Our friend's already in here. As you can see, my phone is broken. And we've got the tickets on here. She was like, oh, don't you worry about it, honey. You come on in. And I was like, okay, that's very kind of you. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
No, that's very good. But you guys did go the hard way. Like, I didn't go for hospitality.
Well, we went in one way, and then I don't know if something had happened, but I know exactly where you went in. I think you went in through like 112.
112,
and then walked across. But we couldn't do that when we went. They'd roped it.
Oh, really?
So I don't know if they'd opened the ropes for half, and they would sort of just started to close it.
Just they'd seen some suspicious characters going through.
We literally did it.
But
you could
tell from throughout the rest of the second half there were.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one of a kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Other people who did the exact same thing.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone
seen the spare seats and everyone's coming down, weren't they? So we weren't the only ones.
No.
But we enjoyed it. It was fantastic. And then we went out with Charlotte afterwards as well, made some new friends, went to an Irish bar where no Irish music was playing.
My favourite thing of a band of where they get up on stage and say, we take requests, you can ask us, we'll play anything. And then you go, play this. And they go, not that one.
it was just like, we will play any... What did he say? It was like, shout out or request. We'll play anything you want as long as it's on this sheet of paper to the side of the stage. Yeah. Like this laminated sheet.
I'm sure at a point they were picking songs that no one was saying anything about.
Oh, yeah.
Well, play this Irish song. Sorry, what was that? Is that Sweet Home Alabama? Okay, we'll do that one.
Yeah, we got that one. Yeah. Thanks a lot. But we had a wonderful, like I said, we had a wonderful time. And after our escape... from Charlotte in the nicest possible way. We have ended up back in Pinehurst. And as we arrived here, a few things were going on in the world of golf.
Mm.
We have Mr. Scottie Scheffler, who is now rocking a very attractive beard and a mallet putter.
He looks good.
Cruising it around 66, the final round of the Arnold Palmer Invitational to absolutely destroy the field.
Yeah. He was playing a different golf course today.
I think, listen, I tongue in cheek suggested at the start of the year that I think Scottie Scheffler's going to win like 13 times this year.
Well, because it's only 12 more.
Because he started working with Phil Kenyon, he had to sort his putting out. His ball striking is so good. Well, like it's literally at this moment in time better than Tiger at his peak.
Yeah.
Which is wild.
Which is crazy. Yeah. Like, when you see him swing, when you see him move, you're like, you've no idea how such a golf swing could produce such incredibly consistent results.
Yeah.
Like his coordination and his skill is just off the charts to be that good. And to be that good with the long game and to be that crap at putting is so weird.
Yeah.
Like it makes absolutely no sense. So something had to change. Something had to give. There was literally only upward momentum for him because he could only improve. He was like bottom of the field's most weak in putting. Like he couldn't get any worse. So something seems to have clicked. Switched to a spider putter, switched to a mallet away from his Scotty Cameron. And yeah, everything just literally fitted into place this week. Mm. At a massive event, 4 million first prize.
What did you say the final day, how many putts did he make inside?
So I've seen two different stats, but I've seen 17 twice now, so I'm going to go with that. But basically, Scotty made 17 out of 17 putts from inside 15
which
feet.
Which is actually wild as well, because we got like a little putting mat here. That's 8 foot. Like, double that, he's literally held everything inside.
Every single
that.
One, yeah.
It's wild.
It is bonkers. It was 3 weeks ago, was it, where Rory made a comment and said, like, I'd love to see Scotty with a mallet. So... Rory McIlroy, you're
it's good publicity for TaylorMade.
You've kind of shot yourself in the foot there.
Thanks, Rory. I think for TaylorMade, it's great, obviously, because he's a TaylorMade staffer but didn't use their putter.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, switch into his putter and he wins a big event. So that's going to be great for them. And it shows, because I think with putters, probably more than any other club, it's such a mental as well as technical thing.
Absolutely.
When you switch your putters.
Oh, yeah.
And it's probably the one part of the bag where if you want to make a quick change, like, it's a great place to go.
Yeah.
Like, drivers are very much just performance-based. Yes, they're confidence-based, but if you hit a driver further, great. You know, it's going to go in the back. Hit it a bit straighter, great, it's going to go in the back. With putting, like, I mean, that mallet is going to be more forgiving than his Scotty Cameron. But he's a very skilled golfer. Like, he will hit the middle of the putter more often than not. So I don't really see how it's going to make that much of a difference from a technical standpoint. This is all very much just confidence and feeling comfortable. And as soon as you see a few balls starting to kind of roll in, then that's huge.
Yeah, yeah.
I think we've kind of seen in the last few years, especially around irons, and how... Maybe not necessarily in the pros that much, but particularly in sort of like the better players that we've filmed with and seen, that everyone's kind of feeling like blades are not redundant now, but kind of there's what's the point?
Yeah.
Because you can get irons that are forgiving, still give a sort of bladed profile, if you like to look at that behind the ball, but offer more. And I mean, I don't know if this could be the case, but like, where does the blade putter now kind of sit? Like, where are the benefits against having something that is more forgiving?
I mean, you can still make, and something which we need to point out, you can still make a bladed putter relatively forgiving by weighting and kind of what Callaway have done this year, more with the face. You know, there are ways to give it an element of forgiveness. Now, with a mallet putter, you've got a greater advantage of shifting weight more to the perimeter. So you can increase MOI, you can stop a little bit more twisting at impact, you can start the ball online a little bit more. The transfer of energy from the club to the ball, it can be increased.
Yeah.
All these factors are, you know, can be apparent within the club design. But as mentioned, you know, these are very, very good golfers. You know, tour professionals find the center of a putter more often than not. And I think with, like you were saying, with irons, you know, the players that kind of we film with, and, you know, when I'm kind of on a range at a tour event at the Open, for example, I'm looking around. These guys do not switch their irons much at all. Like, they're using, some are using new irons, but a lot of the irons in the bag, we're talking 7, 6, 5 years old.
Yeah.
Once they find something they're comfortable with, there's no need to change, because they're not looking for, like, big distance gains in this kind of section of the bag. They're looking for control, and if they've found a set of irons they can have that with, then great. And as you mentioned, blades, players still do use them, especially kind of like in the shorter irons, but you'll see more and more golfers kind of going into a setter which is a little bit more forgiveness based, not to the extent of a like a normal kind of amateur handicap golfer. But yeah, there's definitely that little bit more of an element of forgiveness now.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned it before about how, you know, a putter can especially can be very mental in regards to when you look down on it. Does it just feel right? Do you like the look of it? Is if there's a putter you used on a particular day and you had a very good putting day, those kind of things stick with you. One of the other videos that we've filmed since we've been out here, which actually is coming out next week, is a rematch of you versus Grant. And he made the same comment, and he had irons that were 1 year, 2 years old. Mm. And I think you asked him and said, you know, are you going to get the new irons? And he said, I probably will, and I will get fit, and they will probably be the exact same specs.
Yeah.
But when I put them in my hand, they just will feel a little bit different. Mm. Even though on paper and the way they're set up, they should be exactly the same. When you become used to something and how it feels in your hands, and you know, it's almost like there's no sort of quantitative or qualitative thing you can put on these irons. It's just how they look, how they feel, what's your emotional attachment to them.
It depends on the players as well, because like we're speaking about this from how we feel about golf clubs, like with a tour professional. Like a lot of these guys are literally the very best in the world at their sport, so the tools that they use are going to be very, very precise.
Oh yeah, and they'll know if it's not.
But also, it varies from player to player. So we're talking about Phil Kenyon working with Scottie Scheffler. You know, I've done not really a lot of stuff with Phil, but I've been around him and I've spoken to him, and I know the way that he goes about things, and I like him as a person as well. But he's very, very meticulous. He understands things about, like, you know, shaft torque and things within putting, which are tiny but make, you know, these fractions of differences.
Yeah.
And he will go into that details. He will go into that data. And it's one of the reasons why kind of him and McIlroy started working together, because he was so like data and so like process driven, and McIlroy wanted to be freed up, which is kind of why he went to work with Faxon. But with Justin Rose, for example, completely transformed him from a okay putter to a very good putter by going through this approach of being very data driven, very technical. But that's Justin Rose. That's like how he approaches golf.
Mm.
Like he's super, super kind of process, super number orientated. So for like a Scottie Scheffler, obviously I have no idea kind of how he goes through his kind of bags of these club selections. But if he is someone that literally sticks that putter behind the ball and thinks, you know what, I just like the look of that, and it's giving me more confidence, that is going to outweigh and that is going to outstrip and outperform, you know, even if you're looking at the data and you're not seeing any improvements there, if you're feeling confident with it, you're going to be able to get the ball online more often than not.
Yeah.
So what you're saying now is that he's going to win like 13 times this year.
Well, he only needs 12 more.
12 more, right.
Yeah.
Probably, I mean, three majors.
probably. Everyone said it and you could see it. It's all he needed to do was have an average day with the putter.
Yeah.
He goes week in, week out. The ball striking, just, he never has a bad week on that regard. It's literally just if he can hold putts. And by the looks of it, with the new putter, I do worry for the majors, because I love to see new people win.
Mm.
And I know that Mick's not with us at the moment, but it sounds like he's died. He's back at home, but he's not a big fan of Scottie Scheffler, and I don't think he'll be very keen about this.
Just hates his swing.
Like, yeah.
He just likes the look,
I think,
of things.
It's good though, like, because it is a great example of how golf should just be swing your swing, and just anything can work, apart from if you're the guy who played yesterday on the number two and had the swingless club, then swing the club's swing.
The ball, I mean, the ball doesn't care what swing looked like.
Exactly, yeah.
What it looks like. Yeah. So, and Scotty is definitely like the best ball striker in the world right now, even if it doesn't look like he's the best.
Mm.
Winning $4 million for that is obviously fantastic. And there's quite a few, what's the word? Not exactly spicy kind of takes, but definitely more movement on the professional golfer's standpoint about how they want the PGA Tour to look.
Yeah.
Kind of moving forward. And it's kind of hard to not put this in the context of what is happening with LIV as well. to kind of group everything together. So throughout the week at Arnold Palmer, a few questions were asked. Rory kind of brought this up, and he was saying he's a big fan of trying to restrict the amount of players on the PGA Tour. So he wants basically a much smaller premium sized field. So like I think 100 players was kind of quoted to be in this top echelon of the PGA Tour. And then having less tour cards for people who would be ranked lower than that. So there would be a lower turnover of people coming up from kind of Korn Ferry or DP World Tour, getting onto the PGA Tour, and less people dropping off. Now, Wyndham Clark kind of also kind of weighed in on this and said, yeah, 100 would be great. And he kind of floated the idea that maybe the bottom 20 at the end of the year lose their card, and then 20 get promoted up from the lesser tours, the feeder tours. And again, just trying to restrict the amount of players that are in the top of the PGA Tour. The reason for this is because the start of this year on the PGA Tour, there have been a lot of winners that you wouldn't say are household names.
No, not at all.
And the PGA Tour, and I think like TV companies especially, are panicking a little bit because we know, we've seen the data, that when a player who isn't well known or isn't kind of a household name isn't in contention, people aren't watching. So from an entertainment side of things, which everyone seems to be talking about now, that becomes a problem. So these conversations keep going round about how you can get the best product to watch, which is the whole point of why LIV was born. Getting all the best players in the world, if possible, in one spot, putting it in a time zone of 18 holes where everyone's playing at the same time. So everyone is easy to watch. You can get your favorite players. There's no cuts and all the rest of it. So what kind of Rory and kind of Clark were talking about, yes, there'd be promotions and demotions from this kind of at top echelon of PGA Tour golf. But it is a bit, yeah, it's a bit Super League-y.
It is a little bit, and it's like, I mean, I'm very much on the boat of like, I love, you know, these sort of sponsor redemptions or things like Monday qualifier, stuff like that. I absolutely love that side of the PGA Tour because, you know, you get these people that will be coming up from the Korn Ferry Tour or college, you know, just popping out of anywhere, and it, you know, it creates the stories. But yeah, I don't know. It's just, it feels, what was the quote that you said about, or someone summed up the quote, like, if you're at the top of the ladder,
if you've just climbed up to the top,
yeah,
don't be the guy who takes away the ladder.
I don't know, as a concept I don't
hate the thought of having some kind of jeopardy in that, you know, people come up and come down. You've seen that it creates a lot of excitement and sort of that final day of, you know, it, obviously in football it works very easily and it works well, but it's a shame because I think like these guys are so quick to forget that Wyndham Clark 2 years ago would have been that guy who was getting relegated, and I think he was 112th or something in the standings 2 years ago. It's just how short their memories can be sometimes, and that they kind of forget. You know, they were at the bottom once. Like, they're not entitled to kind of just have this closed shop now that they're at the top. Just feels very kind of, it just feels a bit of almost like naivety as well to like what the golf scene is at the minute, because there are so many good golfers. Just because someone is 111th, if we do, or say 101st, if you want to say that it's going to be the top 100 players, that 101st golfer is still incredible of how good they are. And like you mentioned, like all these winners that we've had recently, so to some people, fair enough, they might not turn on and watch it. And at the end of the day, that's kind of, you know, with everything, money makes the world go round for them, and they need the figures and they need the people to come and watch these events. But as a golf purist and someone who, you know, appreciates the sport and also a love of interesting stories, it's great to see these guys win, and you learn about, you know, the struggle that they've come through to get to the point they are, you know, having been off the PGA Tour and then come back and won. And you wouldn't necessarily lose that completely, because obviously guys can come in if we do this relegation promotion, but you wouldn't have it week in, week out. And as you say, you lose your Monday qualifiers, you lose that extra sort of like additional kind of linkage between your club pro and the professional players, and that you can have these stories of people come in and out, and it needs a lot of work. Obviously, it's a very early conception. It's literally two people talking about it in an interview. But it seems to me that the pair of them have kind of got to the top of the game, and now they're there, they're happy to shut the door, and that doesn't feel right.
I mean, like, the PGA Tour at the moment is already so cutthroat in terms of how hard it is to get onto the tour. You know, to get to playing in a tour event is so difficult. So to make it even harder, I don't know, would that be good for the professional game? You know,
I think the argument is that if you're good enough, you'll rise to the top and you will become one of the best players in the world if you work hard enough and all the rest of it. But I think, like you both said this, a lot of players who are lower down in the rankings, they need the opportunity to play in these events to improve their game. And it's only through having opportunity do you get to understand the levels at which your game needs to race to, but also gives you the experience of playing in these kind of atmospheres. Like, none of these players will, even though the US college system, for example, is fantastic at bringing golfers through, very few players are going to be able to step from that scene straight onto the tour and be a ready-made pro. It does happen, but
like Nick Dunlap this year, you know.
Yeah, Nick Dunlap, it may be a bit of a strange exception with the fact that he's obviously was at college when he won.
Yeah.
And that can happen. Anybody of this type of quality can have a week and play fantastically, but that doesn't mean that they're going to be around forever. It doesn't mean that they're automatically entitled to be in the top 100 or whatever you want to call it. And we've seen that with Manasera, who won on the DP World Tour this week. You know, we're talking about someone who was the second youngest winner on the DP, the European Tour at the time, won the BMW PGA Wentworth, you know, was on top of the world and completely lost his game.
Yeah.
And he's just come back and he's won on the DP World Tour again in South Africa. Fantastic win. I'm absolutely delighted for him because he did really just fall off the golfing mountain and had to climb all the way back up the tough way. Like, won on Challenge Tour a few times last year, I think it was. Went to play in the Alps Tour to try and get his game back. You know, these are the types of stories that actually make you enjoy professional golf, when you see people come back from adversity, when you see people rising up the ranks and becoming one of the best players. If people just like dropped into this top 100 and we take it for granted that Rory's going to be there, that Wyndham Clark's going to be there, yes, it might be exciting on the Sunday, but we all know, certainly from a British standpoint, and this is something which I feel American sports does lack when watching, we all know from a British standpoint, when we're watching the FA Cup, for example, in football, it's one of the best things because you never know what's going to happen.
Yep.
You get stories of teams from lower leagues coming up against some of the biggest teams in the country and winning these giant slayings that go on, and they make that competition. They make these stories. And it's the same with golf. Like, having a lower ranked PGA Tour player come through and win, that's a great story in its own right. And if you want to create some kind of like golf super league, it's very short-sighted because you're just going to constantly be watching the same players. And even if they are your favorites, it will get stale.
Yeah, 100%.
You need this kind of turnover of talent to come through. And it is giving the opportunity to the lower ranked players to develop and get better, which is going to make the tours stronger as a whole. We're in this weird kind of messed up situation at the moment where it seems like everything that the tours are doing is so based on what the TV figures are and what the audience figures are. People will watch sport if you give the best athletes in the world a platform to perform against each other. You don't have to manufacture falsely to get these players in the same room. They are going to just gravitate towards each other eventually. So rather than like chasing these short-term viewing figures, it would be much better if they just figured out the best way to get everybody back together again and playing in the same environments. because that will create its own anticipation, that will create its own kind of market. It just feels so weird. It feels so attempted to be manufactured at the moment that it's just a bit of a turnoff. And you know, we're seeing this. People are contacting us and, you know, the listeners of this podcast, the viewers of this podcast, about how little golf they are now watching because of how fractured everything feels. And because of how the game has moved on and gone in a direction which a lot of people don't like.
Yeah. I mean, and even obviously this is kind of stemmed from Liv and the comments that Mickelson made all however feels yonks ago now. And it's hard to really look at it now and kind of think, has all of this development really done anything for the game of golf in terms of for the viewer? Because everything's kind of been pushed along for the players and making more money, and those kind of conversations have been brought up. But as you say, it's created a very disgruntled golfing space that doesn't feel very nice to kind of sort of be a part of anymore.
Yeah, very, very separated. Like, you know, you'll have people that are committed to the PGA Tour, DP World Tour, and then you'll have people that are like, oh, I'm only going to watch Liv now. You know, it's like you get these sort of separations at the moment, and it's just,
You obviously always, like I say, you've got the two sides, and they, in terms of a product that fans, purist golf fans that would want to watch TV and want to watch golf on TV, there, for me, I didn't want anything to change. I thought, you know, everything was set up as it was. It was very easy to understand. The PGA Tour was what it was. The DP World Tour felt at about 2-3 years ago when they announced the DP World partnership that it was getting to a stronger position. And now with Liv, I feel a bit kind of like, I don't know how to feel about it anymore. Originally, it was all like, oh, it's good that these conversations are now being brought up. But then if it never happened, the thing we had in the past was actually quite nice and cozy. And
yeah. Mm. Yeah, I think you're right, literally right in exactly what you just said there. It doesn't feel like anything that's happened within the last 2 years has made the game better to watch.
No.
And that's a real kind of problem when all these decisions are being made in the attempt, certainly on the face of it, to make golf more appealing, to make more people want to watch it. And it's just turned off like a large proportion of the golfing world audience. And we are not, certainly I'm not saying that change isn't a good thing. You know, we wouldn't be sat here talking to you guys. We wouldn't be kind of making the videos on YouTube if golf hadn't moved in a certain direction and it hadn't changed the way that people are watching golf. Mm. You know, so change can be good at times. It just doesn't feel like in the professional world any of the change has happened and made things better.
Yeah.
I think the only thing that it has done, I think it's put more emphasis on the majors because of obviously like the fact that, you know, you don't see, you know, your live guys compete with the PGA Tour players all the time. The fact that, you know, they do come together four times a year, and that is for, you know, for the majors. Mm. And for me, it's like, I didn't used to watch loads of golf, but I'm so tuned into the majors now because everyone's back together. So, you know, in that sense, I imagine the viewership of majors has gone up, but, you know, whether that means that week to week PGA Tour, you know, sort of numbers have lowered, I'm not sure.
As far as viewership on PGA Tour, DP World Tour and Liv, the viewership is down.
Mm.
Everything's down.
Mm.
But the majors, the Ryder Cup, things that matter
have still kept.
They still get their audience.
They always would have anyway.
Yeah.
The thing is, they're like, they're understandable. You've got the majors.
Yeah.
You're playing for a green jacket. You're playing for the claret jug. You're playing for things which have kind of come and grown out of the purity of professional golf and have become these historical kind of moments within the game. And you're playing, you know, we've had this conversation before, like nobody really knows or cares about what the first prize is money-wise at the Masters. Everyone just cares about who's going to get a green jacket.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is, on the face of it, just nonsense. Isn't it, really? Like, yeah. Someone's going to get a green jacket.
Get a garment.
That's what you're excited about. Like a weirdly coloured jacket.
Yeah. Mm.
And that's what's great about golf. You know, you're playing for the prize and the prestige of winning a major event, you know, one of the premium things. And even that is kind of in risk of becoming slightly kind of not tainted exactly, but you're talking about the best players in the world. Some of them won't be there automatically because they're playing on a tour which isn't recognized for world ranking points, which, love or hate Liv, if you agree with it or not, it does now seem very strange how the best players in the world are not being ranked correctly.
But did you see that that Liv like sort of withdrew their...
Yeah, I think that was more of a move because the official World Golf Ranking body basically said that they weren't going to be given the points anyway. So I think it's...
They just sort of gave up the fight, potentially.
A little bit. I think it's more just to, again, just publicise the fact that they were applying and now they're not.
Make a thing of it.
Yeah, just to make a little bit more of a thing of it. It's strange this week, actually, because we've heard a lot more... I've certainly seen a lot more people talk about the LIV event in Hong Kong actually being good.
Yeah.
And I'm saying that without any kind of like snarkiness. Like the productions and some of the stuff that they've been trying to do, a lot of people haven't liked it. But I think this week is the first time I've seen people say, oh, the crowds are decent, like the golf was good, the event was good. There was some genuine excitement in what was going on. Yeah. Abe Anser came through and won in a playoff. So it does seem to have been a slight shift this week. If that carries on, we'll have to see. I didn't watch any of it apart from a few highlights.
Yeah, so. I watched Kim's 65. Mm-hmm. Watched Kim's 65. So, you know, again, that's a story, you know. And yeah, that's that's what they want. They were probably banking on him to do this sort of thing. So
literally banking.
Yeah, literally, bro. Yeah.
Literally banking.
Anthony Kim's definitely banking some of that.
He's definitely banking a lot. So yeah, again, we're just in a more of a weird place.
But yeah, I think that one thing I'd say about like the Myrtle qualifier, like if
make sure you don't say
I'm not going to say it. But the just to say that I don't think that's going to be the end of it. I don't think it's going to be a one and done thing.
Oh no.
I think I really believe that this is the start, and I think that PGA Tour is going to cop on to it a little bit. DP World Tour.
I wouldn't count on it too much, no, to be honest.
I know they have kind of have been, you know, this whole thing has been through and they've gone through the PGA Tour and everything. I do think, well, we'll have to see when the you know, the final product comes out, but PGA Tour will have to cop on to it, surely. You know, from the viewership, but I reckon this, you know, in terms of views, obviously, like, we'll put out a video. Everyone's going to be putting out a video. They're going to be putting out a video. Like, it's... The viewership of that alone is going to be way more than what they would be getting on the PGA Tour. You know what I mean? Like...
Yeah.
So how would they... You know, how can they adapt it by using creators to, you know, transcend and, you know...
It's tricky because I agree. I think they will probably come out the end of it and probably see... that it will be a success. I would say the whole experience we had was great and a success. The thing with these things are is that if you do it too much, it gets oversaturated a little bit, and that kind of, you know, this real one shot, one opportunity. And you can be having content creators battling out every week. Otherwise, yeah. I think there would be a point where people would be a bit sort of, oh, well, this is a bit annoying, kind of. We are maybe taking places away from guys who wouldn't necessarily get in there and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So there's learnings that they can take from it for sure. And it's an exciting time to, you know, as a content creator in the world of golf, like it's becoming more mainstream golf now as well.
Yeah.
And it's going to be interesting to see where they go with it. The thing I wanted to talk about was after, because I haven't watched tons of LIV. I did catch a couple of bits here and there, but to be fair, we have been working. we've hardly watched any of the at Bay Hill. Mm. But I would have loved to have been going into the President's Cup with what would have been, I think, of probably the best international side that they could have put out in years, to a point where I feel that they would have had a pretty good chance of winning.
Mm. Yeah, weird move for me, that. So the President's Cup, Mike Weir is the captain this year. Is it in... Where is it this year? The President's Cup, where's it actually taking place?
It's international, isn't it?
Yeah,
is it Canada?
I think it's an international one this time.
I think it might be in Canada as well. Don't quote me on that. But what Mike Weir has basically said is that for the international team, that they won't be picking any LIV players. Now, for me, personally, I think that's kind of shooting yourself in the foot a little bit.
Royal Montreal.
Because you've got Cam Smith, you've got Joaquin Neiman, who's playing some incredible golf right now. Obviously, Abe Anser, who's just won, who really does genuinely seem to like the President's Cup as well.
Yeah.
You got three guys there straight away that would add to your team.
Yeah.
And like Jacob was saying there, you know, that with those players, it advances and enhances. I'm just trying to think of anything else.
Romances.
It really does like make your team better. And, you know, the US team is going to be strong. So why not like have them? It doesn't make sense to me.
You like you say, you mentioned those three guys. You stick Minwoo Lee in there. You stick Adam Scott in there. You stick Tom Kim, Sung Jae Im. All these guys that, like, when you look at that team, usually it was kind of, you know, a very, very top heavy. And then they'd fill it out with guys that were a bit sort of, when it comes down to it, you know, if you kind of go down the list and you match them up singles wise, that America would always going to have more power than what the international side had. But the way that the team could be, and the way that it was like building, and Neiman, who may be playing the best golf in the world outside of Scottie Scheffler today, it would have been really exciting to go into that with the first time thinking the international team could win this on their soil, even though it's a very large plot of soil.
Very large.
it's just a shame. It feels like a weird move because I think the Ryder Cup, obviously, Team Europe didn't take any LIV guys. We knew that was going to be the case. Brooks being the only standalone American who couldn't not get picked. Yeah,
he just caused that. He caused it, didn't he? Caused the upset.
But I feel like that selection almost then maybe could have allowed the floodgates to get opened a little bit and just sort of take the weight off any other captain later down the line, that one person's already done it, already picked a LIV guy. Nobody died. It was fine. Like,
yeah.
Everything came out. Like, there was no problems with it. No one really said anything at the time. And Mike Weir could have done the same thing and picked a really strong side. Not that they can't put a good team together now anyway, but you're missing maybe three guys who are 1, 2, and 3
big players,
on that list.
Yep.
Hideki's going to have to do a lot of work. If he doesn't go to LIV. Yeah.
He's not going to LIV, is he?
Very silent over it. And Mr. Greg Norman has made it perfectly clear that he wants him.
I remember his name.
He's been him for ages.
I remember his name getting popped up.
Because he's big, you know, he's obviously huge for the Asian sort of, you know, market. If they get him, it's big for LIV.
Exactly. So he might be going.
maybe he'll play this and then he'll go. Mm. He'll win the Masters again, then he'll go.
I won't count it.
He's been
playing well, isn't he?
Yeah, no, he has been. Yeah.
That's what I mean. Well. This is going to be...
Instead of pulling on the green jacket, he'll pull on one of them LIV like Letterman jackets.
Bomber jacket.
Yeah.
Or the one that Ram did.
That's the time to do it.
Yeah.
They've all done it. Anthony Kim was in it. Everyone was in it.
It's a well-worn jacket.
It's the same jacket.
Very deep pockets.
One size fits all.
Yeah, basically. Sort of thing. Yeah. They just like squeeze it in from the back and let it go.
But he had like an AK there as well, didn't he? Yeah, that looked cool.
In the letters, not
the letters. Yeah,
they're
not
slung like a.
He had an AK over his shoulder,
carrying Kalashnikovs around.
How was he swinging it? I haven't actually seen his 65.
Kim.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it looks really, right. Yeah, really good. Yeah, putting it well as well.
Yeah. I mean, it's a difficult one, isn't it? Because I think obviously coming back's always going to be the hype, and from what he was like, but getting back into competitive golf even if you are a very good player, it's hard. It's very different.
Mm. Yeah, mm. When the difference between playing with a scorecard in your hand and not, the pressure of it is very, very huge. Different. Yeah, very, exactly. Very different. But it's good to see because, I was worried for a little bit. He was churning out over par rounds every, and it was kind of like, even though it was a... It was a marketing move. There wasn't really kind of much else behind it. Obviously, the unicorn that he is, the enigma that he was, that every now and then you go on Twitter and there'll be a random Anthony Kim sighting. It's nice to see that he is still good at golf.
This is the start. This is the start for him.
Are you going to say 2020? When's the Ryder Cup? 2025?
Yeah.
Team USA?
Team USA.
We're gonna have fun, but
if he gets to that level, then cool.
Yeah. Is that the spicy take?
I just mean like a top 10. That was what I'm getting for.
You're keeping it very level.
Yeah. Okay. This is the start for him.
So get too excited.
65.
You're not going to put out like a live win.
No.
He's not coming over to England and going to win here.
No.
No.
Are you going to bed now?
I think I might just go. Well, we've got this week.
Keep going.
You can go further.
Oh, that's fantastic, isn't it?
I tell you what I love when we do something visual for a podcast. It's really great.
I'm on a lazy boy recliner.
Pete is fantastic. Flat out.
That is the ultimate lazy boy recliner. Mm. I've never seen anything like that.
This is exceptional.
Do you want to just pull a blanket over you? And
yeah, I might have to. Yeah. Well, we've got no quiz this week, haven't we? So.
No quiz, no tenable, unfortunately. So, but we'll be back next week.
Back next week. Cool. Well, we might as well wrap it up there.
Welcome back.
It's almost like spring thing as well. This, it like
right, a little bit of a,
bit of a rocker.
You'd have it in the park, like you can just go back like that.
What, it's the little horse? The little horse.
Yeah, the
thing
little
on
horse things. It's on that.
You go on it as like a 15-year-old, and you're just way too heavy for it.
You did ride that like a 15-year-old then. Oh, when was the last time you went on a child's rocker in a park?
Last year.
Yeah, probably.
Definitely. Guys, right, I just want to say a huge thank you for listening. Huge thank you for watching as well. If you've not become a subscriber to the YouTube channel, please do that now and follow us on your favorite podcast provider. I think it's time that we get ready for Tobacco Road tomorrow.
Yeah.
Another one.
Very excited.
Off the bucket list.
Very, very excited.
All right, guys. Thank you so much. And we'll see you next time.
See you. Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.